Alba Alto, Type versus Function by Ellen Colquhoun, and it was first published in 1976. Although his first major projects, the Paimio Sanatorium and the Vipuri Library, belonged to the canon of the 1920s, from the start Alva Aalto's work diverged from that of the main Dutch, German and French architects of the period. What was lacking in Aalto's work was the equation of functionalism and rationalism. Although Leonardo Mosso is no doubt right to deny any direct influence from Frank Lloyd Wright, it is easy to see how this idea arose. Aalto's work has many features in common with the Romantic and Expressionist wing of the modern movement, the wing which was descended from the arts and crafts movement through Henry van der Velde, as opposed to Herman Mathesius. Aalto interprets function in terms of a Heraclitean rather than a Platonic view of nature. What interests him in nature is its emergent and phenomenal forms, rather than the rational order to which it may be reduced. The modern movement in its early phase was concerned with the general schemata by which both society and architecture could be reconstructed according to rational principles. Apparently, Aalto never concerned himself with such a universalism. He was content to remain, quote, close to the ground, and to follow where his instinct for form led him. But it would be an error to associate his work too closely to that of expressionists such as Hugo Haring and Hans Scherun. He was as remote from their formalism as he was from the schematization of their opponents. His forms always pick up meanings from the context and are not based on an a priori categories. Thus, the complexity and variety in Villa Marais are the result of a response to particular features of the programme. Neither the main living area nor the bedrooms face the concave space of the garden. As a simple binary classification, open slash closed, might have suggested. Instead, this initial implication is contradicted, and the space of the house expands in both directions, permitting a variety of views and lighting, and a generosity of lifestyle which would have been denied by a more exclusive interpretation of the party. Each zone of the house is allowed its own individual character without being dominated by a strong unitary concept. The bedroom windows lean toward the sun. The studio introduces an entirely new formal theme, the cluster of poles which screens the staircase, echoes the forest outside. All these statements and counter-statements come about because the causes of things are seen to be multiple. The greater order aimed at must not be so elementary as to stifle the life of the parts. Aalto's strength lay in his ability to maintain artistic control over many contradictory elements and an apparent excess of ideas, which he was able to synthesize into a rich metonymy of architectural forms. There are many analogies between Aalto's work of the late 20s and 30s and the work of other schools within the modern movement, but Aalto gives to these common themes an entirely new interpretation. For example, in the library in Vipuri, although the overlapping volumes suggest a compositional method characteristic of de Staël, they represent separate organisational types rather than irreducible spaces. Again, Aalto's use of repetition, reminiscent of constructivism and of certain works of Laszlo Moholy-Nagy, is less concerned with mechanical reproduction as such than with establishing an analogy between mechanical reproduction and biological or geological processes. Aalto's relationship with Le Corbusier is more complex. At first sight, one could not imagine two architects with more contradictory sensibilities. Aalto seems to have had no interest either in Le Corbusier's Esprit du Système or in the spirit of French classicism, which was so important a feature in Le Corbusier's work. This is demonstrated in their differing attitudes toward the plan. For Le Corbusier, the plan gives order and intelligibility to the whole building. In Aalto's early work, the plan is dealt with pragmatically, and at Viipuri, for example, there is a clumsiness in the entry system, which comes from trying to create an axis across the stratified volumes, which leads to the projecting porch and large window terminating the block, both of whose relationships to the main masses seem unresolved. In Aalto's later work, the plan becomes more closely integrated with the principle of overlapping and ambiguous volumes, but in doing so, it seems to diverge even further from Le Corbusier. However, as Dimitri Porphyrius has pointed out, in Aalto's work, there is, together with a sensitivity to contingency, a typological drive which relates him to Le Corbusier. The difference between them is that for Le Corbusier, the emphasis is on the creation of new types established on rigorously rational principles, while for Aalto, the type is something which already exists as a historical and social reality. As such, it is not reflected in his work as formally complete, but as an underlying idea capable of almost infinite paraphrase and extension. Aalto is reported to have admired Corbusier more than any other modern architect. This may perhaps be partially explained by his recognition of powers of intellectual formulation which he himself lacked. But it may also owe to certain preoccupations which they had in common. These preoccupations included an admiration of both the architecture of peasant societies, particularly around the Mediterranean, which dates back to their early involvements in national romantic movements, and the architecture of neoclassicism, which they saw as providing a core of traditional doctrine outside the confines of modernist doctrine. Perhaps the most outstanding feature of Aalto's work, and one which seems related to his study of Italian towns, is the way in which he strives to make each building into a social microcosm. The majority of Aalto's projects were a type to encourage this interpretation: libraries, cultural centres, theatre complexes, and churches. But he even aims at the same spatial hierarchy in individual apartments, as in the Hans Viertel apartment block in West Berlin. But whereas in Le Corbusier a clear external form establishes precise limits to the universe of building, in Aalto the subsidiary elements are freely grouped around the central core. The building becomes a kind of town whose outer elements take up their positions as if through a tropism. A number of functions are classified into a closed set, each of which is partially opened up again into the neighbouring set or into the core itself. This, quote, peeling away of forms is an important ingredient of Aalto's work. The subtraction of forms is as important as their addition or juxtaposition. This characteristic leads to the extraordinary impression that parts of Aalto's buildings are in fact ruins. Thus, in the library of the Institute of Technology at Otaniemi, the form of the auditorium roof creates the impression of an archaic fragment. Fragmentation in Aalto has a metaphoric dimension, unlike in De Stael, where it is formal and systematic. In the conflict in Aalto's work between a typological approach and a reliance on contingency and function to generate architectural form, certain general problems related to functionalism make themselves felt. There are two levels in the notion of function. At the first level of function exists a generalized type bringing together many dimensions of meaning. At the second level, it exists as a solution to a specific operational problem. Alto sometimes starts from this specific level, as in the Baker House dormitory at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, where the undulating wall is intended to reduce traffic noise or to provide views up the river, or in the Church of Imatra, where the volumetric articulation satisfies the need for multiple uses. In neither of these cases is the form determining function really fundamental to the idea of the program, and yet it establishes the overall configuration of the building. The fact that the forms have, quote, poetic contents, which reverberate far beyond the original functions, does not bring them any nearer the central meaning of the program. In some of his late work, Alto seems to depend on minor and accidental aspects of the program to produce ever-varying solutions to basically similar problems. In his late churches, the relations between altar, spatial axes, and light source are always being modified according to criteria which are not altogether clear, as if the idea of a church was no longer able to provide him with a typical solution. For Alto to have submitted to external norms, to the idea of type advocated by Mathesius and Le Corbusier, for instance, would have meant an artificial restraint on spontaneous invention and a denial of architecture as the expression of the richness and complexity of life. But it is here, in the idea of architecture as expression, that we may find the clue to weaknesses in certain projects of Alto, to some of which I have alluded. It is doubtful if the undulating walls at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology or the billowing masses at the Imatra actually express anything, for the simple reason that the functions they represent do not correspond to any expectations which users or observers of the building would be likely to have. They therefore become pure forms, meaningful perhaps in terms of a nominalism which would consider all functions as of equal importance, but meaningless in terms of the architectural program and its cultural context. That Alto himself was aware of this problem can be seen from one of his articles in which he discusses the different meanings of towers in the landscape and differentiates between towers with potentially cultural meanings, such as church spires, and those whose meaning is restricted to ideas of mechanical function, such as water towers. Here, he is implicitly admitting that the meaning of forms is due less to their innate expressive power than to their semiotic function. To act according to this admission would not necessarily entail a rigid conservatism, but it would entail an awareness of pre-existent values which form part of the architectural message. The value of the best work of Alto lies in the fact that it does not show such an awareness, but a consideration of the work of the greatest exponent of the, quote, expressive function in the modern movement inevitably leads us to question some of the basic tenets of the functionalism to which he was committed.